episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Lindsay Hughley, and joining me today is David Bonetto. David served as general counsel to the Louisiana Bankers Association, where he's responsible for advising the LBA and its member banks, savings banks, and savings and loan associations on banking, legal, and regulatory issues. He also represents the banking industry in the state and federal legislative process as a registered lobbyist. In addition, he regularly represents the interests of the banking industry in the judicial system by filing briefs and selected litigation. David earned his Bachelor of Science in Finance from the Louisiana State University and his Juris Doctorate from Tulane University School of Law. He currently serves as a member of the Louisiana State Law Institute, UCC Committee, Security Devices Committee, and Notaries Committee, and previously served as a member of the Component Parts Committee. In addition, he's a Code 3 Assistant Examiner of the Louisiana Bar Examination. He also currently serves as a member of the Board of Commissioners of the Louisiana Clerks Remote Access Authority representing the banking industry. He's a frequent lecturer on banking legislation and other commercial topics. David was elected to the East Baton Rouge Parish Metro Council, where he served two terms from 2000 to 2008. And in 2005, he was selected to the Baton Rouge Business Reports Class of 40 Under 40. Welcome, David. I am so excited to dig into our topic today. But first, here at Banking Matters, we always like to start off and hear how our guests got their start in banking.
Well, good morning, Lindsay. Nice to be with you. Glad to be invited to do this and to share what I know, the little I know. But I got into banking as a part-time college job. That was my first exposure to the banking world. As working in the industry. And I had a neighbor who worked for a community bank in our city. And just through conversation with him, I learned of an opportunity of a part-time position for a student job. And the student who had the job before me had graduated and gone on. So just really by luck, I did have an interest in business and investment world and that sort of thing. And so he knew that, and I think that had a lot to do with, he knew my interest, and they were looking, and it started from there. So worked all through college. I balanced ATMs, and then I also maintained the safe deposit box database for the bank as far as keeping all the billing updated and the accounts updated on our database. So that was my role. So it was good. It was good people, and I really enjoyed it. So. Did that, left for law school, and the rest is history. But
yes, that what's funny is there's so many of our guests that have been on that they start in high school or college. Yeah. And just kind of, it's like they leave for school or they have to move, but they always kind of have circled back and then their place where they're at.
That's accurate. That's exactly what came back to it. Absolutely. So,
yeah, that's what I did. I had worked during college at a bank the entire time. And by the time I left, I was the internal auditor. But once I left, I tried to go be in public accounting and I was back in 3 months. It just wasn't for me. So, but definitely a normal kind of path, I feel like, is what a lot of our guests have had.
Well, it's an important part of every community banking. And the people are so good and they care. Sure. And they're just good hearted people, and I enjoy working with them. So
for sure,
good place to be. So
it is. And speaking of all of these good hearted people, I want to talk about the burden that banks carry in regards to check fraud. It is an epidemic that is pretty much swept across the entire nation. It has every bank that I work with, that I've been with, they're dealing with it, and they're. And now it just feels like every time you turn around, banks are getting hit. Customers are getting taken advantage of. Businesses are getting their checks copied and stolen and washed. I really want to hear what Louisiana Bankers Association is doing to kind of combat this epidemic that we have.
Well, Lindsay, you're right. It is an epidemic's a good description of it. And we at the LBA, like all trade associations, try to be responsive to the concerns and hear what's going on with our members. And, so getting calls and having conversations with bankers about what they're seeing day to day, it's been a steady build of conversations over the past, I'd say probably since COVID, where it really started and has grown since then. Just conversations about problems with customers, falling for scams, depositing checks that look suspicious, all of that. And so I started hearing about it and started growing more frequently that I would hear about it. We do a series of statewide meetings where we travel the state. For the past 2 years, when we go to these meetings and we interact with bankers, we ask them, you know, what are your concerns? What are you seeing? What are your issues? And for the past 2 years, check fraud has been in the top three of those issues. So it's definitely a problem. And I guess it results in financial loss. There's concern that it could erode the customer's confidence in their bank. So it's a system. It's an industry-wide problem, and it's not just a Louisiana problem. It's a national problem. I think you may have said that, and I believe it is. And talking to my counterparts around the country, they share similar stories. So I think that's true. Also, I think FinCEN has put out some recent data that document the numbers of cases of check fraud is in fact increasing. So this isn't just anecdotal storytelling. This has been documented. And so I think that's important. But back to what you've asked, yes, we at the state level or look at what we can do to try to help our banks and help their customers with combating check fraud. But also it's a national issue, and these fraudsters are not always local. They could be in other states. They could be in other countries, maybe not friendly countries to the United States. And so, there are things we can do locally, but it also, anything that we can do to work together with among all our states and then the federal government and our federal banking agencies, anything they can do to help bring resources to the issue with law enforcement is needed. But back to Louisiana, back to our state, one of the things we look at is, are there laws that we have that could be changed or improved, or new laws that could be passed to help on issues, in this case, check fraud. And so we interacted with and got feedback from bankers and law enforcement. And I'll tell you a quick little story. We participate in, or I do, regional security officer, bank security officer groups around the state. And these are great because you've got bankers with law enforcement agents getting together maybe quarterly to talk about what's going on in the community, what type of fraud, what type of crime, financial crime they're seeing. And we've had conversations about check fraud. And through those conversations with law enforcement, they would express concern about how, well, maybe some of these laws that we have are not working. Maybe the penalties are not strong enough. One story was that one law enforcement agent had a suspect that he knew, and they had arrested, who had been maybe a drug dealer. And the story was, I think the suspect even told the law enforcement agent that, I used to deal in drugs, but I realized I can make more money with that, less risk of going to jail if I move over to the check world. So little light bulb up that, you know, well, okay, well, even fraudsters, I guess, use some logic there about, well, what is the downside risk of committing this crime? So all that story is really background to tell you kind of what we decided to come up with and what we did in our state. And that is, we decided to look at some of our laws that law enforcement uses to prosecute check fraud, and to see if those laws needed updating and do the penalties need stiffening. And so that's what we end up doing. And we worked with law enforcement agencies and the law enforcement associations. The Louisiana Sheriff's Association is an example of an organization we worked with to get their feedback on the language and what to do with our legislation. But this past year, we passed a couple of bills that I think hopefully will help. It'll take time, but I can just kind of run through some of those with you to kind of give you a flavor for what I'm talking about. But one other piece of this that I didn't mention is mail and mail theft and how it relates to that. So I'm going to talk about these other bills, and then I want to talk about the mail component, because I think it's a big component of all this. this. So anyway, one of the key laws that we were told by law enforcement that law enforcement uses to prosecute these check fraud cases is called the monetary instrument abuse crime. And so what we learned was the language was kind of old and wasn't clear that it reflected everything that's going on. For example, check washing. Check washing is where a fraudster will take a stolen check. They'll dip part of the check with a signature line, not the signature line, the pay line, the amount, dollar amount, are dipped in a solvent that can cause the ink to dissolve. And then they can replace those lines with different information. So we added language to our crime to describe how a check that you pass that's been washed and describe what check washing is part of that crime. So that hopefully will help law enforcement and prosecutors and judges see, oh, this is exactly what happened. It fits, the crime fits the fact pattern. So hopefully that'll make it a little easier to work with the criminal statute to address those types of cases. But more importantly, what we also did was we stiffened the penalties. We increased the penalties for offenders of this crime. And we also specifically, because we think these people are probably repeat offenders. This is not something to do once and never do it again. So what we did was decided to impose a 1-year minimum jail penalty for a repeat offender. If you've had a prior conviction for this crime and you do it again, then you will face a minimum 1-year jail sentence and an enhanced civil penalty, a fine for doing it as well. So that I hope will get sus criminals' attention, and they'll have to think twice about, okay, do I really want to do this? Is it really a no-risk crime? That was the whole point. And, you know, you might say, well, okay, have you had anyone arrested under this crime yet? And, you know, have you seen statistics? Well, number one, I'd say this law was enacted in August, so it's early to tell. But the other big picture hope is that criminals are deterred by the statute versus prosecuted under the statute. So I'd like to see some relief where we see a decline in this type of crime. So anyway, that was probably the main change in our statute. We did also update a payment card crime statute to include involving skimming. And that's a little off topic as far as check fraud, but we also did some similar enhancements and modernization of that law as well. So anyway, that was a great success to pass the statute change that we did. And you know you're on the right track when you're in committee, you're presenting the bill to lawmakers, and they want to stop to tell you their story of check fraud and how their family member had a check that was stolen or was altered or counterfeited, and all the hardship it caused their family's business or their personal their accounts. And so you know you're on the right track when you've got law enforcement sharing their own war stories about the problems they've had with this issue. So it was a good feeling to know we were doing something good that folks really could connect to. So anyway.
And I will say, I've talked to several other SBAs about fraud, financial elder financial exploitation, check fraud, all of that. And I've wondered, and I've asked several of them, how hard was it to get your legislative people, your representatives on board with getting these bills passed, with getting these things? And everybody has come back saying that once you hook in with that personal piece, it's a lot easier for lawmakers to get on board and get behind and back something that they have experienced, just like you said, because it's like, to me, check fraud, they're not discriminatory against anyone. It's affecting everyone.
No, and our legislative leadership was very much in support. We have a governor who just had a special crime session earlier in the year. So it's an area of priority, at least in our state. It kind of fit in with kind of the sort of where we are right now politically. So, but it was an area of need for I think. And the thing is, it's not just as simply it's good for the banks. It's good for the public. It's good for our customers, you know. So that was the other thing. It's not. It's good for everyone. So to make these changes. So we will see, and we'll. But we're now in the process of making sure law enforcement is aware of these changes, so that they can use these the changes in the statute to help address cases they have. So that's sort of our where we are right now, trying to spread the word, make sure everyone's aware of what has changed so that it can be used. So
absolutely. And so circling back into mail theft, I've personally experienced that, and my entire neighborhood had all of the mail stolen mm-hmm. for like 3 days in a row back last year. And everybody was calling and they were like, have you got mail? And I was like, I know exactly what's happening. And all I could think was, mm-hmm. please, nobody have birthdays or have stuff in the mail, because it would be gone.
Yeah.
So can you talk about what you guys in Louisiana have done?
Well, my first thing to say is, if anybody were to ask me, I'd say, please, please don't mail a check. Much less cash. Don't mail cash, but please don't mail a check. And if you do mail a check, don't put it in your box in front of your house with the little flag up. That's a signal to a criminal. Hey, there might be a check in here for you. But it's broader than that. And this is a serious, sophisticated crime, organized. I think they're organized in what's happening. And so we have had news stories and incidents where fraudsters have literally had the key and were able to open the blue receptacle box on the street corner or in front of the post office and steal the whole bin of mail. So we've had stories of surveillance done on particular mailboxes where they've been able to apprehend suspects who drive up at 3 a.m., get out and empty the box and go make rounds to other boxes. So there are folks out there who are stealing mail, they're using the keys, they're finding other ways to get the mail, and then they're then doing lots of things, selling it, or maybe they're washing it themselves. But it's not somebody who's like, well, I just found this check, I wonder maybe I can maybe cash it and nobody will know. No, this is a little more organized. This is a little more systemic. Another example is the fact that if you go onto the, and I've not done this, but law enforcement talks about the dark web. There's such a thing as the dark web, and where checks can be seen. Stolen checks, wash checks, available for sale on the dark web. So it's organized, it's widespread, it's probably multinational, not just local. But back to the mail theft piece to this, you know, the issue is this is not a unique Louisiana or Baton Rouge issue. It's happening all over if you talk to folks. And what we've heard from talking to the U.S. Postal Inspector, and that's the agency they're in charge of law enforcement regarding postal matters, is that their resources are spread very thin. And there's so many cases, so many incidents of this, that they are stretched thin right now. So that is really what led to us through conversations with local law enforcement about what can we do about this. And to that end, there are a lot of incidents where customers have talked about how they mailed a check and then it ended up being counterfeited, altered, whatever. So we're convinced that mail theft is a key component or source for where a lot of check fraud originates. So, and to that point, FinCEN has recently issued data, a report called an FTA. I can't remember the name of what that stands for, but it's a report they issued in September. You can get it online on the FinCEN website, where they go into reviewing SAR reports and data to show how much check fraud is related to stolen mail. So that's great, because it's not just anecdotal. Again, this is data that federal agencies, law enforcement can use to hopefully justify increasing the resources to try to combat this issue. So anyway, so back to our story on the local level, you know, law enforcement basically took the position local. We really can't do anything about it. We can call federal agencies, but they're stretched thin. If there's not large dollars involved, they may or may not be able to really follow up and investigate it. So the idea was through conversations with them, well, why don't we make it a state crime? That way, local sheriffs, local police officers could, in fact, take action. So that's what we did. So we collaborated with law enforcement. We created a new state crime, making it a criminal act to steal, possess stolen mail, or to sell stolen mail through boxes. So we also made it a crime to possess a public mailbox key with intent to defraud. So there were stories about how these keys were being stolen from postal delivery clerks, or maybe purchased online. So they were getting these keys and using them to access the boxes. So again, that law went into effect in August. So it's too early to tell what kind of impact it's having. But I will say that we have been contacted by some other states, bankers associations, with expressing interest in that change and wanting some information about what we did and how we went about it. So it looks like maybe some other states are looking at that. And my understanding is there are current states that do have had this crime already. We weren't the first one to ever do it, but we probably one of the most recent ones to do it. So we feel like we have equipped law enforcement with a new tool to help add, I guess, more law enforcement resources to combat the issue, which is what we're talking about, combating check fraud. So we think that'll help, but it's going to take some time. But anyway, that's a big deal, I think. And our bankers and law enforcement are all excited about that. So,
yeah, no, I completely agree. Just being able to make it more clear where law enforcement and financial institutions can partner together, because I feel like that is the only way that we're going to really make an impression, especially across the nation, and especially in regards to mail theft, especially because I've heard several people talk about how the U.S. Postal Service, their inspector department, is completely, like, you can't reach them. They're very hard because they are so stretched thin.
Yeah.
And for good reason, if they're dealing with this across the board. And so what a good way to enact a state law to be able to rally your own people. And then with the security officer quarterly meetings that you guys have, bringing law enforcement and the banks together, that I have several places that I know that they don't have access to stuff like that. And so the banks are having to reach out instead of already having that network built. But what a good resource to put together for your banks too.
Yeah. The law will help. We think it'll help. And I think everyone's glad they've done that. And it'll add resources. The regional security groups, I tell you what, it's great because, you know, banks and security officers at times will have issues and they'll need to know who to reach out to in law enforcement. And if they don't know who to even call or who that person is, the expectation that they're going to get a quick response is probably not going to be that high. But if you know who that person, that officer is, you've worked with him on prior matters, maybe you had meetings with him, he or she is going to return your call. They're going to be familiar with what you do and who your bank is. And hopefully you're going to get some help. So it lays a nice groundwork, helps foster good relationships, working relationships between the two parties. But more importantly, you know what else? It's a great conduit for sharing information about what's going on. And the adage about, you know, if a certain type of scam is happening across the street at one bank, it's likely to spread to your bank. And that's so true. And so hearing stories about various types of check fraud scams that are happening, and law enforcement can share, or bankers can share, those banks that hear about it can then take that information back to their bank, share that information with their tellers and other frontline folks, so they can be on the lookout for that. And that is huge. In having some knowledge about what to look for on the front end, start asking questions, can a lot of times ferret out a lot and maybe avoid a lot of the problems that we're seeing. So that's happening, and I'm a big believer in those meetings. I think they're a huge help. Now, they also will share information. They have, an email distribution list. So if there's the new information that comes out in between meetings, they'll share that. So that's also helpful. So anyway, there's too much information when it comes to knowing what's going on in the fraud world. So
yes, absolutely. But as we wrap up, we always like to ask our guests, what's one piece of advice you'd like to leave our listeners?
Well, based on the topic of this discussion, I would say, please don't mail your checks. Please don't mail your checks. And if you can do electronic payment, that's even better. I know that a lot of times bankers don't want to really push a customer to do that because they don't want to feel like they're being trying to inconvenience the customer or being difficult. But it's for their own good because of all the reasons we just discussed about the difficulties it causes when someone's account is subject to some fraud. So that's my one. In light of our discussion, please don't. And if you do mail a check, go inside a post office itself or hand deliver it to a postal service clerk and not just put it in a box in on the street or on in front of the post office. So that's my one request. So
absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Mr. David. And for the rest of our listeners, that's Banking Matters.